Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Now, some may say that my guest went to the dark side after finishing college, but reclaimed his soul when he joined the family architectural salvage business. When Harry Maharaj completed his mechanical engineering degree, he got lucky call, in his words, not mine, from a recruiter who found his CV online and asked would he consider moving from engineering and going into institutional equity sales in Davy. 8 years later, having built a strong client relations in Europe and the US, he quit the job, moved home to Kilkenny and started in the family business, Kilkenny Architectural Salvage. Founded by his father to harness a long-standing passion of his in the world of salvage, the business has just celebrated its 25th birthday. The company started originally building up stock by attending auctions, dealing with other salvage yards and buying from everyday people who had items to sell. Since then it has evolved, and while they still buy from those original sources, they now have an extensive network of people and businesses who they deal with. They work very closely with some of the top hotels, restaurants and bars around Ireland and also import items from the UK, Europe and even further afield. Robin's three sons, Paul, Harry and Connor, all left their jobs in Dublin to move home to join the business in the last 5 years, which has had a huge impact on the scale of the business, in particular with bringing the business online through social media. They have 80,000 followers and have found it a great way to bring the world of salvage to the next generation. Harry, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Aidan. Great introduction.
I think I got everything covered there. Right. Talk to me about your foray into the dark side. Let's start there.
Yeah, into the dark side. It's funny you say that. That's the same comment I got from my lecturer in UCD when I said he's going to get a call from Davy for a reference. He said, best of luck with it, but enjoy the dark side. Yeah. So, I studied mechanical engineering in UCD. Loved it. Maths was always kind of my strong point going through kind of secondary school. And I went into that route. And yeah, it was a really, really good degree. And at the time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a pure engineer or not. But when I kind of got to fourth year, I just had the head down, focus on the exams and kind of get the best results I could and worry about a job afterwards. I didn't go applying for any graduate programs or anything like that. And then it was 2010, difficult time everywhere. And one day I'd been applying for jobs all over the place, but there wasn't many companies hiring. And I got a phone call from a recruiter and she had found my CV online, luckily, as I say, and said, would I be interested in going into the finance world? And I said, I'm open to anything, I'll give it a go. And she kind of gave me a bit of a background on it. And after a few minutes of chatting, she was like, it's with Davy Stockbrokers. So I was like, okay, I'm not even in the business world and I know that name, you know. And I got to do a couple of interviews, managed to get through those. And started on the institutional equity desk with zero business knowledge on day one. So that was a bit of a daunting thought, but it was life changing really for me.
And the 8 years that followed then, you know, when you look back in it, what were the highs and the lows?
Well, I think anyone will say in the market there's highs and lows every day, depending on what's happening.
Yeah.
You know better than anybody on that as well. But the beauty that I found in there was the team that I was on. I was just given the rope to just go. It was like, get your head down, learn as much as you can for the first 6 months or so. You know, don't go worrying about getting clients or bringing in commission or doing anything that's the important part of the business. Just learn and observe and absorb, really. And that's what I was able to do. And I was very fortunate that it wasn't kind of been put into like a graduate role, even though I was a graduate. I was given in the exact same role that there was guys who were sitting there for 10, 15, 20 years and some of the best equity salesmen in the country or in the industry in total, you know. So I was getting to sit around these guys and learn. And then, as you know, the exposure to the companies that were coming in and getting to go for lunch with Michael O'Leary of Ryanair or Albert Manifold of CRH, you know, that's not a normal thing that you get to do when you're 22. And I'm chatting to some of my friends who've gone and done business degrees and masters and, you know, they're going to kind of do that maybe harder slog that they have to do maybe through some of the big accountancy firms or anything like that. And I'm sitting there with these guys and I'm just listening to everything. And it was just amazing. But then the day comes where you kind of get the tap on the shoulder and says, right, there's the phone, pick it up and start making phone calls, and there's your airplane ticket, jump on it, you're off to London to go and meet some clients. And but I loved it. Like, I'd always grown up with sales as well. That was a big part of myself, my brothers. We'd anyone who has a family business, I think that's just part and parcel of your background. So I was kind of ready to go on that side of things. It was just the business aspect I had to get the knowledge of, really.
And then you made the move back home and into the salvage market. So for the uninitiated, right, give us an insight into the industry, because I'd say there's not a lot of many people that actually know much about the industry.
No, there's not. And I think a lot of people probably still, if they hear the words like a salvage yard, they think it's a group of old lads going around kicking metal and weighing it and scrapping it and doing whatever, where it's the complete opposite of that. You know, like, if you just look at our business, we're there 25 years now. We sell everything and anything from timber flooring, timber beams, building materials, all the way to just furniture, pub memorabilia, all the way up to like completely random and unbelievable items that you wouldn't expect to see. So it's a complete mixed bag of everything, but that's what an architectural salvage yard is meant to be. It's not meant to be, you know, when you walk into a flooring store, you have the perception of what you're going to look at. You're going to look at floors. Whereas when people come into our place, and it's amazing, I'd be sitting in the office sometimes with the door open and someone might walk by into the main warehouse and I just hear, wow. Oh my God, I did not expect to see all of this here. And it's just this plethora of everything. And that's what's amazing. That's our job every day, to make sure there's such an unbelievable mix, an eclectic mix of items there, that the person who walks in, who's coming in to look at flooring, ends up leaving with usually something completely different. And that's what's exciting for them as well. And then we've lots of people who come down who have no idea what they're looking for. They're just looking for a bit of inspiration. They might be doing a project, they might be renovating their house, they might not actually be looking for anything, or it could be just a little gift. They're looking to pick something up random for a loved one. And and that's what a salvage yard is, or should be. There are salvage yards that are just lads kicking around metal, but for us that doesn't work, because obviously we're, you know, there's myself, my two brothers Paul and Connor, and my parents Mairead and Robin in the business. So there's four households that have to make a living from this as well. So we are very much active on running this as a business and growing it. And so I made the move just coming up on 5 years now, and Paul and Connor kind of similar time sets. Within basically the guts of a year, all three of us had left our jobs in Dublin.
And what did they do for a living?
Connor was in the insurance industry and Paul was in the travel industry. And so again, all very different mixes. So we were all bringing different things to the table as well. And we didn't just sit down one evening and go, right, let's have a pint and all decide to quit our jobs and stir it up at home on mom and dad here. It all came independent. And that's also something that I think is important for us, that none of us were pulled back into the business. Like, our parents were very good when we were growing up. Like, it was 2010, as I said, when I came out of college. My dad could have just been like, come work for me, join the business. But he was very much, there is a job there if you want it, but it'll probably be far better for you to go and do something, learn a lot, and then if you want to, you can. But you don't ever have to. Whereas there's lots of, I have a few friends who've gone into family businesses, and I don't know if it's what they wanted to do, but they had to do it. Whereas we absolutely love everything we're doing each day, and maybe that's because we've seen of what the real world out there is like as well.
No, you make a very interesting point, because, you know, I have talked to people in the past where, you know, and when you're talking about intergenerational businesses, you know, there's those who, you know, their children willingly go in and take on and drive the business on. There's those who don't want to do it but are forced into it, and it never ends well. And then there are those that, you know, the parents go, actually, do you know what? I know you're not interested in it, so I'd much prefer to sell the business on to somebody who is interested in it, and then give you the wherewithal to go and follow what you want to do.
Exactly. And that's just so important, because, like, at the end of the day, everybody's out there working, and if you're not doing what you're enjoying, you can, if you're working in a normal job, you can choose to leave. And people move jobs very regularly now as well. Even when I was in Davie, I did 8 years. I think there was only one of my other friends from college who had been in a job the same length of time. Most of the other lads have been through 3 or 4 jobs, because that's normal now. You know, but when we kind of made that move to a family business, you are taking that point, right, this is home now, what are we going to do with this for the next 30, 40 years, depending on, touch wood, how long we have it, and that we can keep it sustainable for everybody.
And going back to the industry now in general, in Ireland, how many, you know, is there a large peer group or competitor set that are similar to Kilkenny architecturally, and, you know, not the just the metal kickers, if you will. What does the industry look like?
There'd be a couple of good yards in Dublin.
Right.
There's one very good yard also up in Belfast. And after that, really, it kind of gets down to kind of some smaller guys who are not far from kind of, they have a good shed out the back and they have some stuff set up, but that's not who we're kind of competing with. But even with the other guys who we all know very well, because like anything, when there's relatively small industries, you know everybody, we're wheeling and dealing together as well, because sometimes we might be looking for something, know the lads have it, and we will be trading stock like that to just, at the end of the day, salvage yards are volume businesses. You know, we're always just what's next and moving it on. And but what separates us is that we always will all have different stock, because it depends what type of jobs you're out and doing. Of course, we will all have cast iron garden benches and a range of flooring, but what type of range of flooring will I have, and what type of cast iron bench will I have versus the other guys? So that's what keeps it interesting for us. And so that's kind of where the industry is. And we're lucky that it's not a highly, highly competitive industry, but it's so unique that I don't think it'd be something that we'd worry about if there was other salvage yards popping up all over the country, because we'd all be doing different things. And there is so much stuff out there. Like, it's relentless, the amount of stuff that's been offered to us every single day.
Well, let's talk about that then, in terms of both the sales cycle from your perspective, but also then the inventory building side of it.
Yeah, so it's salvage yards, I think, and this would be, I'm robbing one of my dad's lines here, where he's like, you know, we are buying stock to hold it, and we're very happy if it doesn't sell tomorrow. We know that someone will come in and buy an item at some point if it's the right item. Obviously, there's certain things that you're selling every single day, building materials, stuff like that's always going, but maybe a very unique statue or something different, we're like, it looks great, it's a feature piece, happy for it to be there. But no, we get probably 20, 30 WhatsApps or emails a day of people sending us stuff to sell every day, 7 days a week. And obviously we can't handle all of that. And that's from all over the country. And that could be from somebody who's, say, yourself, and you're just like maybe downsizing house, or you just have a few bits that you need to clear out, up to a five-star hotel calling us saying, we're renovating the bar or the lobby, there's stuff to come out, are you interested in it? And then we're going viewing it, doing a deal hopefully with them, hopefully also doing a deal to sell them some new stuff for the renovation if we get the chance. But there are so many of those opportunities there, in particular on the commercial side of things, because usually if a hotel changes hands, the new owners have a new vision, and the new vision doesn't look like what the lobby looks like anymore, and they have money to spend, and that gives opportunities. But the key for us is always in the buying, you know, and that's something that myself, Paul and Connor have had to learn from Dad. You know, I can come in with all my business acumen and say I travelled with the best CEOs in the country, but unless I know that I should buy that item at roughly X euros so that I can sell it at X
or
plus Y.
Don't buy such an item, no matter what the price is.
And exactly, and that's even more so, you know, and that's kind of the dynamic that we've had to learn and absorb from Dad as much as possible. And that's been built by just spending time with him, been out on the road with him, and experience. And then we all find our own little niches of things we're kind of into and enjoy buying. But we're just buying stock in and always focused on value. Like, it's very much like someone comes into a salvage yard, they expect there to be a deal to do. There's obviously a bit of haggling, that's part of the game, and that's a bit of fun of it for everybody. But it is that we're buying stuff that we can move it on, because we have a big yard. We have 6-7 acres of outdoor space, 3-4,000 square foot warehouse. I would love to have 100,000 square foot warehouse. That's the dream, because there is so much stuff out there for us to be buying. But therefore, we do have to pick and choose our jobs as well. But we're always just looking for just interesting things.
And how has the scope of products changed over the year? You know, and when you think about it now, you know, what else could be salvaged? Let's just say.
Yeah, well, we just don't know what each day is going to bring. Okay. It really does just come down to a phone call that we can get. You know, we did a big clearance of quite a well-known hotel on the East Coast that had been derelict for a long, long time. And we went in there and we got so much stuff out of it. Stuff that had been sitting in situ for 20 years, you know, where the lights were literally just turned off and they left. But that was just on a phone call. So our whole business look completely changed in the space of 2 or 3 weeks when all that stock came in. But that's what we have to do, because our job is that people kind of go, God, I haven't been out to a salvage yard in a while, or down to Kilkenny to see the lads there. I'll pop down. We want them to do that once a month or once every 2 months. but that they come back and the place looks different.
Yeah.
You know, if you walk into Woody's will always look the same.
Same, yeah.
But that's their job, to make sure it looks the same so that you can find the right item quickly and you pick it up and you go out the door. Whereas when they come into us, we want them to ramble around, look for an hour and kind of go, my God, the place is so different to what it was only 2 or 3 months ago. So the product offering is always changing. There's obviously, as I mentioned, certain things we will always have. Mm. That's our job, to make sure we have, like, we're obviously starting to ramp up now for garden furniture stuff, but we're very specific on the type of garden items we do, you know. So it would be more on the heavier side of your cast iron garden sets, things that are going to last a long time. Even fire pits and stuff, but they're heavy duty fire pits and things like that. But timber beams, flooring, they'd be big parts of the business for us.
And then I suppose the you know, it, going back to the point you said about the, what you want is customers to go back, right? And you are in Kilkenny, and if I'm sitting in Dublin, I'm not making a way down to Kilkenny. But this is where social media has really come to the fore for you guys, in terms of putting on display to a worldwide audience. Don't have to visit Kilkenny every week to see what you have.
Yeah, and it's been huge. And that's what myself, Paul and Connor, really, when we first made that move, it was like, what can we do here that can really make that leap for the business? You mm-hmm. know, like, Dad was running a very successful business. Any business that at the end of the day survived the last, say, we're 25 years now, mm-hmm. so 5 years ago that had been around for 20 years,
yeah.
that was successful. You'd been through booms, mm-hmm. busts and everything else in between.
Yeah.
And he got through all of that. And then for us to come in, it was like, what can we do that can kind of add a bit of fuel to that? And social media has been that. You know, we literally started on day one where it was like, let's just start taking pictures, setting up an Instagram account. And it sounds all so simple, but you have to do it. Yeah. And there's lots of people who don't do it, and there's lots of people in our industry who've never done it. And we're now up to kind of 80, 90,000 followers, and we can now put up a picture or a video of an item and it can sell in 30 seconds. Like, that's unbelievable power to be able to put that out to people.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of having 80,000 people going through the salvage yard every day.
This is exactly it. And most of the time in the salvage world, it's one-off items. Yeah. So we actually only need one person to buy that item. Yeah. I don't have some. There are certain items I have. I'd love to sell 10 cast iron benches. Of course I would. It would be a great day. But if I put up a nice cabinet or a nice chest of drawers or something like that that's come in, I need one person to like that item, say, perfect. Yeah. And they pop over to the website and they just buy it and it gets delivered up to them. And then we're delivering all over the country as well, which is very important in our world because not everything is easy to handle.
Yeah.
But social media has been brilliant, and Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, we're everywhere, you know, and the aim is just to kind of keep putting our stuff out there. It's a lot of eyeballs, and we've started doing a fun thing now with TikTok and Instagram in particular, where we do live tours. So I'm going around and I have my two phones going, Instagram live, TikTok live, and I'm walking around for an hour and people are just coming on saying, can you show me your post boxes? Can you show me your timber beams? And we're walking around, and I did one on Saturday and we had 30,000 people on the live in an hour. Like, it's a stadium full of people, you know, like I don't know what the Three Arena holds, but it's probably not far from it, you know, and it's unbelievable to be able to do that. And some of those people are coming in for 20 seconds, mm-hmm. but in our world, that's unbelievable advertising. Yeah. You have to pay a lot of money to get advertised in front of those eyeballs. So we have as much fun with it as we can as well, and trying different things. And we're very happy to put our faces on camera, and there's lots of people in our industry who aren't. So therefore, we're like, that's what separates us.
So where can the business ultimately get to then?
It's a funny one, and I was thinking about this driving up because I, you know, listening to some of your the guests you've had on where people have sold big businesses, and you know, a salvage yard probably isn't a business that someone comes in and buys, right? Because it's a lot of it is led by the owners because it's their experience and what they're buying and everything like that. But for us, it's all about the stock. Mm. We're just continuously building our stock all the time, adding new items. So that's how I just see it, that in the next 10, 15, 20 years, if we have X euro value of stock now, how many multiples of that can we have in between, as well as obviously running the business and doing general turnover over the 12-month period? So it's just continuously buying items and building that up. And we run a very tight ship in terms of financials. Like, we're carrying no debt. Mm. Like, we own everything, which is an unbelievable position to be in. So I don't see it something that we put up for sale at some point, because I don't know if it's something that somebody would walk in and buy. But who's to say that in 30 years' time, me, Paul and Connor say, right, we're kind of done with this, let's hold a whopper auction.
Yeah, and just
you just sell everything off if you want to.
Yeah. Or, I was going to ask you what do you think is the exit mechanism in it?
Yeah,
you
know? So that's what I know. What some businesses have done, in big businesses in Europe, have tried to do that as well, and it's been a very successful way of exiting the business. But I have kids now. Maybe they'll want to come in. Who knows? You know, and my brothers at some point maybe will as well. So we don't really think about it in that way, though, at all. I'm just continuously thinking about keep bringing in great stock and keep putting it up online, keep the warehouse really interesting. And the big thing as well for us is we make it a fun place to walk around. There are some salvage yards you go into and you're nearly having to push things out of the way and you're squeezing through areas and there's half pallets lying all over the place. Like, when I talk about Woody's earlier, everything been in order. We keep everything in order as well, but it's just a different type of stock. Yeah. So that's very important for us, so that people come down and actually spend an hour and tell people about us, because like word of mouth is everything in our industry, and people want to show off the items they've got as well, Aidan. That's what's so interesting. Like, we have customers who have bought, say, a salvaged oak floor from us, and they come back to us and they say, every guest I have come to my house, the first thing I want, it's not even that they want to know where they're, the person who's bought it is saying, look at my new floor, look at my new floor, because they want to show off something that's a little bit different. And everyone wants to do that with their houses these days as well. I think that the days of the IKEA sitting room is kind of done a bit as well. Everyone is like, I want to be a little bit different, and they pick up a new like coffee table and it's like, I paid 30 quid for that down in Kilkenny Salvage. Yeah. Look at it. Like, you know, they're proud of their find.
But the other thing too, of course, is that you're now part of the sustainability and ESG culture. You know, you have your green credentials.
And we joke that Dad has been doing that for 25 years, and it is in a real point. Like, the amount of stuff that he has saved from going into skips and landfill is phenomenal. And like, there's times I'll find it now today when I'm driving around Dublin, you know, and you're just going past building sites, you're going past old houses been renovating, and you can see people walking out with items and they're just going straight into a skip. Our job is to educate the market, i.e. the builders, the contractors, call us. If it's not us, call one of the other yards, because this stuff can live on, and you'll get a few bob for it as well, and worst case you'll have less skip costs as well, which aren't cheap these days either. And so that's something that we're trying to, so we have to kind of educate both sides of it there. The consumers feel they have the opportunity to either sell some items to us or pick up something that their carbon footprint is, like all of our salvaged items, the carbon footprint is zero technically when you look through any of the EPA forms, because the item has lived its life already. You know, so everything has been associated with it, so we are kind of into that green circular economy line, and you know, we're very happy to be.
Good. What learnings did you take from your time in equity sales to apply to the salvage market? I know it's selling. Yeah. You know, always be closing is normally the usual thing that comes out of this, you know?
Yeah, it is. Like, look, from the sales side of things, I just got huge experience sitting beside some great salespeople. And that's, you know, that's, my dad is an unbelievable salesman. He has been. He worked in the pension industry in the UK during the 80s, where you sold and you worked hard and you did it, and he learned so much, and we've learned a lot of that growing up. But I learned a huge amount sitting beside some great sales guys on in Davie as well. But I think what I took more from it was the exposure to the owners of the companies. We got very lucky and were very, very lucky to get to sit around, back to talking about those Michael O'Leary's and the Albert Manifolds and these names, and listening how they run their businesses, think about their businesses. Like, we very much, I would pull from Michael's viewpoint around, you know, low cost, keeping the costs down. We really, really focus on that. You know, the other day I was only joking, I needed some for the filing cabinet, I needed a few of the slips to put some things in, and I was going to go to the shop and buy, and Dad almost had a heart attack. He said, there is some in a box somewhere. They're
go
here.
Find
and
them.
We went and found them. We got them. Okay, it was 10 euros, 20 euros. But it's that concept that's there, and the principles that are there. And then just from just listening to these guys talking about their businesses, you have to live and breathe what you do when you run your own business. Like, I loved my job in Davie, had brilliant 8 years. But you know, there's always other opportunities out there in the world. When you're doing this for yourself, that, you know, the line is drawn by yourself, where you are, how good is the year going to be, how many hours did I put in? But not just the hours, what ideas did we come up? Yeah. How do we differentiate ourselves? That's all on your own back. So, and then taking a long-term view as well. You know, a lot of these big companies that we got to meet, they've been around for a long time. They're not trying to make a quick buck and flip. There are some companies who are in that world, you know, different industries, but they've been around for 20, 30, 50, 100 years. How do we set our business up that we can do that as well? Which takes patience, and is hard sometimes, because sometimes you have to maybe sacrifice some short-term gains, which are easy wins to take, but maybe now is not the right time to do that project. Let's push it out a bit because it'll be more beneficial in 12 months' time.
Yeah. The working as a family, where does the business end and the personal life begin? And like, you know, when you're going around to mom and dad's for dinner, is it always business that's talked about at the kitchen table?
Yeah, it's a funny one, and it's something I was actually listening to one of your other shows the other day with Kieran in Finland,
yeah.
And he was mentioning the same thing, and it was funny, and I was sitting there thinking about that, and I was like, God, it's so true how that line is so blurred now, and I was laughing about it only the other day. Like, my brother Connor was away at a stag last weekend, and then we were over having a family dinner or something on Thursday, and everyone asked him, well, how was the stag? And I was like, oh yeah, how's the stag? I've been sitting beside you for 3 days and I didn't even think to ask you that, because he came back in and we just went straight into business. And it does blur that lines, but no, we are very good. And I think maybe the dynamic of, like, I have some young kids as well, and them adding into the fold, maybe kind of when we're at home and everyone's maybe having a family dinner, yeah, or it's whatever, it kind of pushes the business side a bit to the side, because there are more important things in the world. But the business is what sustains all of us to be able to have that balance. But it's a hard line to try and draw. And to be honest, maybe it's not meant to be drawn as a straight line. Like, if we're sitting there having a cup of tea and next minute someone just comes up with something, they're talking about it, or if this was an issue, let's talk about it. Because sometimes it's very hard to do it in the yard.
Yeah.
Because you're so busy. It's actually having the dinner on a Thursday night where we all pop over to see each other, that is kind of like, maybe we can actually hash out one or two things here quickly versus it taking an hour in the yard because the phone rings or I'm running out to deal with somebody or whatever it is. So, we probably need to get that balance a little bit better, but we're only 5 years into it as well, and we haven't killed each other. So
that's a good start.
So yeah, look, we're doing something right in some shape or form.
Hopefully we're not sending you to couples therapy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No. We're doing okay so far.
So, like, the thing about it is, though, you not only have the family dynamic now with yourself and your two brothers, you also have the intergenerational one, right? So obviously the business, the new versus the old guard how easy was the handover for you, and how easy or hard do you think the handover was for your dad?
Yeah, it's funny, like, dad was 68 last week, and he's working as hard as he ever has. It's a funny one with him, because he's extremely fit and healthy, thankfully. You know, he plays soccer, indoor soccer, once a week, and racquetball twice a week. You know, he puts us to shame nearly, you know. And so that's no bother, and that's probably a function of him just being always out working for the last 25 years. You know, there's lots of people who have jobs who they look forward to retiring because they say, I want to go and do this when I retire. Yeah. I want to go and do this. I'll be happier doing this. He loves coming into the yard. Like, he actually does. Like, he jokes for the last 2 years, he's nearly joked on the 1st of January. So that's it. I'm only going to pop in and out every day. And, like, he's in every day and he loves it. But he is the flexibility now that he doesn't have to be in. So he comes in when he wants to come in. If there's something he wants to work, if he wants to paint a room at home, he'll paint the room at home and then pop in afterwards. But his most fun part and everything he loves about it has been out on the road.
Right.
So he just wants to come in, pick up a van. He's heading off to Dublin to pick up two or three jobs and just be out doing that. He's kind of, and anyone who's worked in retail for a long time, at the end of the day, it can wane on you as well, dealing with customers every single day. So I think he's kind of, you know, happy to not have to deal with that and not have to deal with paperwork and all of that type of thing. And, you know, I was only joking with him the other day, I take care of a lot of our kind of invoicing and the accounts and the paperwork. And I was like, God, how did you stay on top of this, you know, when it was just you? And he said, well, that's what I was doing every evening at 9, 10 o'clock upstairs in the office. You know, you guys were gone to bed or whatever it was, and that's when it was done, you know, but it didn't impact. We didn't see him doing it when we were having dinner. We all sat down and had dinner, but that had to be done in the background. So you learn a lot of things now as well when you look back and kind of go, God, he had to deal with all of that on his own as the owner with employees. We're very lucky now that we have the three brothers and both our parents. Like, our mom comes in and works on Saturdays as well, you know, she's very active.
And how many employees have you got now in the business?
So there's basically 10 of us there now. So you know, and we have a couple of great young guys working with us now, and they're really enjoying it. And I think it's funny, I was listening to one of the young lads talk about how he's describing it different versus one of his friends who worked with just one of the normal retailers. And, you know, he just said, I come in and I don't know what I'm going to be doing each day. You know, what's going to be in the van? What are we going to be unloading? What's Robin going to be talking to me about this item that came in? And he's just like, I'm learning and absorbing all day long here. Yes, I'm still lifting a heavy item from here to there, which the lad in the retail shop is doing as well. But he's like, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it has a provenance. The thing that's, you know, it's not a flat pack furniture bit. It's something with provenance, something with a history.
Exactly. Like, we brought in a load of old school desks there just recently, old pitch pine, you know, the lift up lid ones. And the graffiti on the inside of it, which you would expect, everything and anything you can imagine. But some of the dates on it were like 1978, 1982. Like, these are 40, 50 year old pieces of furniture now, you know, and they're unbelievable. He was looking at it and getting a laugh out of it. He was only in school 3-4 years ago, probably graffitiing his own desk, you know. But with 2020, you know.
I'm interested in terms of the sliding door moment of the move from equity sales down to the thing, because you could have easily stayed in equity sales, you were good at it, and you could have stayed there. So talk me through that sliding door moment as to what, you know, what made you think that was the right time, and you know, in the run up to it, was it always in the back of your mind, well, I'm definitely going back to the family business, or, you know, could I be talking to you, you know, 5 years later and you still be in equity sales?
Yeah, it was one that took a lot of thought. I said I was very lucky on the desk and was given a lot of bandwidth to kind of go and succeed, if you want to call it that, and I loved the job. But for me, I think I loved the sales aspect of it more than the market side of things.
Yeah.
And maybe that was just a function of my background, that I hadn't come from the business side of things, so I had to learn that. But it was the sales side of it and kind of meeting the companies and stuff like that that I really enjoyed. So, and in that role, like, it's heavy going. You know, you've been doing it a long time as well. It weighs on you. And in particular on our desk, where there was a lot of travel.
Yeah.
Like, I was mostly covering a lot of our US clients after about 2 or 3 years. So, like, I was flying to America every 3 weeks. Mm. And like, that weighs on you. Great fun, love it. Absolutely had
great fun. But after a while, every hotel looks the same, every cab looks the same.
Exactly, and every airplane looks the same. And you're just like, it becomes very functional. And, you know, I did that, and eventually you kind of start weighing that up. And I think that entrepreneurial side was always kind of inside me as well. You know, I'd always just, it was just niggling. Mm. And I think when that itch is there, eventually you kind of have to make a decision. But it was a big decision to make. Like, Davey was a brilliant job, you know, you can be in a very comfortable position. And I was going to take that plunge to, can the business sustain having another person come into it? Paul and Connor hadn't made that move yet, but they were kind of thinking about it as well. And the business was not in a position to be able to take care of all of us at that point. We were going to have to make it, be able to do that.
You were going to have to add value.
Yeah, exactly. And really make those jumps. And like, my wife was pregnant at the time. We had bought a house down in Kilkenny and all of those things at the same time. And then COVID was actually only 6 months out, but obviously we had no indication of that. So we dealt with that in another way. But yeah, it was a big bet. But to be honest, I was whatever age I was then, I was kind of just turned 30, and it was kind of like, if you're not going to bet on yourself, then when are you going to? Because if I'd done another 10 years, I probably would never leave, because you just get tied into it, and you'd have kids up in Dublin, and they'd be in school there, and you'll have bought the house. Mm. So the freedom that came with that, and I always, like, it's funny, I look back at some of my old notebooks now as well, like when I was in Davy, and ideas that you might be sitting on a plane and I'd be scribbling down all these company ideas. I'll set up this company, I'll set up this company, and this, most of them absolutely horrific ideas when you look at them, but they were something that just came to you. But then there's loads of them that are there where it's like, could dad do this? Could dad do this? Could dad do this? And then I was like looking at those again only recently, and I was kind of thinking, yeah, like 100% made the right decision here, and have loved every minute of it. Hasn't been always easy, and it's not meant to be, but it's a decision for me, for family, everything. Like, it's just been unbelievable.
And what do you think about, or how do you feel about what you've already done in the company now?
Yeah, it's I think, if we take a long-term view on it, which we are trying to do, we've done the simple things.
Right. The low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, it's low-hanging fruit, but they were able to make big differences because we had 4 or 5 of us to be able to really go at them and target a few projects each. Like, the simplest of things, and it sounds so simple, getting price tags right. In most salvage yards, you go in, there's no prices on anything. Mm. And then that suits some guys, because some guys might be swinging around on prices, right, depending on who's in front of them. Just getting price tags on everything, and it's transformed the business, because people aren't coming up, how much is that yoke in the corner, how much that, and then they'll only ask once. Whereas now people see it, they're there, and in our world it there's so much inventory always coming in, and it's not, we have 10 blue medium sized t-shirts, we have 20 large, that's easy to manage. Ours is like, we have a little side table there, we have a side table that kind of looks the same, but the legs are a bit different, so all getting them all coded, and then throw on top of that having a website and trying to track all that, That's why, like, we're the only salvage yard in the country that you can actually buy direct from their website.
Okay.
No one else wants to take on that workload because it's hard.
Yeah.
And like, we've hired a new guy now who's doing all of our photography so we can get items up quicker onto the website. Like, it used to be me or Paul or Connor doing it where it's like, God, get out 10 items there, snap them quickly on the phone and throw them up. And it just doesn't work. You have, if you're going to do it properly, do it right once. Mm. And that's what we're trying to do. But we've very much done a lot of the low hanging fruit, and that's brilliant that that's been able to kind of give the business
about scaling that now from now on forward.
It is. And in our world, a lot of those things come down to like extra warehouse space because there's opportunities to buy stuff and we're turning it down because we don't have the space. But they're decisions that you have to make as the owners now versus this makes sense for the customer. It's now where do we want the business to go to? And they're the conversations we are having quite actively now as well on what we're going to do there.
What do you think the biggest mistake you've made so far in the business? And what mistake maybe did you learn most from? May not have been the biggest one, but one that you learned most from.
Yeah, I think it probably actually nearly ties in similar to what I was saying there. I think at the very start, I went for a few ideas or projects that I thought, let's do this now. Mm. This is a great idea. And we were in no way ready for it to be able to deal with it. And it's actually the hardest thing on that is actually just writing that down on a sheet of paper, putting it in a folder and saying, we'll deal with that in 2 years' time because we might be ready for it. So I think at the start, maybe a little bit of that. And to be honest, actually probably not been aggressive enough on some of the social medias quickly. Because social media can kind of come in and out of vogue very quickly as well. And like, TikTok now is just so powerful, like so powerful, and we weren't early to that. We were probably a bit later, so it's been a bit of a catch up there. And we would count ourselves as quite social media savvy, versus, especially in our industry. But we definitely were probably a bit slower on getting onto one or two of the newer platforms because you kind of get a bit comfortable. We have, like on Instagram, we have 40
social media covered.
Because I'm good on Instagram. It's kind of like, but no, but there's all these other ones as well. Go and spend time and learn about them. So maybe a little bit of that. And then to be honest, the biggest mistake I've had personally, and whether the other lads would agree or not, is I probably haven't spent enough time learning enough about this is a Georgian sideboard because X, Y, Z. The actual fundamentals of what the architectural world is, because you just don't have the time because you're trying to run the business every day. So I'm trying to get better with allocating, you know, a couple of hours a week where it's like I'm actually picking up an antiques guidebook and
learning. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How do you keep informed? What do you read from that perspective?
Yeah, and that's essentially what it is. It's funny. You can argue it both ways. You need to read those books to kind of learn some of the lingo and just get some information. But more often than not, the only way you learn is when you go out and buy a piece and say, for argument's sake, you pay €250 for it and you're thinking, oh yeah, that was okay price, maybe it's worth double that. And then it doesn't sell. And you're like, it's the easiest way to learn, okay, I overpaid on that, it's not actually worth X.
But it also, if you have that bit of knowledge, you're able to spot stuff you go into a big hotel that's getting done, you go suddenly, ooh, hang on a second here. There's a little gem there that we've just seen.
It definitely, and look, everyone wants that only fools and horses moment, you know, and we all pray for those moments. But in our world, usually when we're doing jobs, we're buying everything.
Yeah.
There's not many people who can do that.
Okay.
Who can walk in and say, okay, so you're clearing the bar and everything. We walk in, we'll buy it all.
Yeah.
We don't go in and go, that's a lovely piece, that's a lovely piece, that's a lovely piece, we'll buy those. Yeah. And that's very valuable to the seller.
Yeah.
Because they just kind of want one person coming in
and gone and everything gone.
And also for the normal person who's just selling a few bits, you know, like the world of done deal didn't exist 20 years ago. So salvage yards would have had a lot more power.
Yeah.
People can put stuff up online, but they don't know who's turning up at their door to buy stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's become more and more prevalent, especially in the last year or two, that people have been a bit more cautious. So they like calling us because they know the name, they've seen it online, they can trust us. And we can come in and go, well, you have 10 or 20 items, we'll buy everything.
Yeah.
Here's a fair price.
And
we have to, obviously, people know we have to sell it on. So they know they have to sell it at a price for us to run a business. And that's the world we're in. And there's lots of times we go to jobs and we don't do a deal. And that's fine. It's just a numbers game for us as well. Obviously, you don't want to drive up to Monaghan and been going all the way up there and you don't do a deal. But more often than not, we're coming home with a van full of stuff.
So
I think the learning side is very much just kind of getting a bit more on the fundamentals of the business in terms of what the items are coming in. But time does that as well.
And I suppose the other side of it too is you're lucky that your dad is still in the business and he has the great eye. And
this is it. And to be honest, what I did last year, actually, I had a great one where one of my dad's best friends runs a huge antiques business out in Edinburgh.
Okay.
And he's a Kilkenny man, and it's basically it's the biggest antiques business in the whole of the UK. Like, when I think of our business, we have 3,000 or 4,000 square foot, whereas I went to there, they have 80,000 square foot. It's an old whiskey distillery, is
right.
what it was. And Georgian Antiques is the name of it. So if anyone listening is in Edinburgh, go to this place. And he is the foremost expert in anything antique related in the UK. So I went and spent nearly a week with him and just shadowed
soaked
him
it all
and just
up.
Watched and learned so much from him. And it wasn't even learning about the naming of the item, because they're higher end now. They're antiques, right? Like, he has pieces that you're there and it's like a set of six chairs and it's 60 grand, you know, this type of thing. Like, he's in that world. But it was just watching how he ran his business and trying to find that those kind of people. And not you can get a bit insulated as well, where we all think we're brilliant and geniuses, but we're all just saying kind of the same ideas to each other, because we've all grown up with it. And similar in our world in Dawson Street, you kind of end up in these little bubbles. So it's trying to open your ears a little bit and listen to what's going on around is very important as well.
When it comes to staff, I mentioned you're 10 staff there, but, you know, as you look at staffing now and are hiring talent, you know, where are you in terms of, do you prefer to bring people in, try to develop them up? And you know, I suppose the other thing too is it's an unusual industry. So for young people, it might not necessarily, they probably never even thought about it as a career. So, you know.
Yeah, they wouldn't, like, there's not many 20-year-olds out there who know that there's a salvage yard in Kilkenny and they might only live up the road. But potentially they will now, because if they're on TikTok, we might pop up and they go, God, that's interesting. They sell pub signs. Like, we've had lots of younger lads coming in, which has been great, and girls, buying bits and pieces, either presents or for themselves, you know, if they're looking for something different. Very much has been bringing in people and trying to train them up and getting them to learn what we're doing and how we go about it. But I think we're probably at the point now where maybe need to bring somebody in with a bit of experience who can. It's a hard one, because I think when you're running your own business, even when there's three of us there, you're all doing everything.
Yeah.
And we all overlap on stuff. We have certain things that we all know. That's Harry's job, that's Connor's job, that's Paul's job. But we all overlap. So if somebody's off, we can all do it. But it's whether we need to actually bring someone in who has a skill set that can kind of, you just take care of all of that, so none of us have to think about that anymore.
Yeah.
And we haven't done that. So that's probably a conversation over the next 12 months that I think we're going to have. But
so it's kind of bringing in almost, not quite, but the professional management, company management, as opposed to anybody necessarily knows the day job.
It is. And I think it, sometimes as an owner, you need to be able to step back at times as well. It's very easy that I can be like, no, I'll go out and I'll help the lads. I'll jump in the teleporter and I'll move those pallets. And you're like, that's not value add by me. I can have somebody else do that, who that's their job, and that's perfectly fine. But what should I be doing? I should be thinking about the business, or I should be doing something else that's, you know, really going to impact the business. And that could literally be calling up one of your providers for electricity and trying to get your bills down, because someone has to do that. And that's the most the eye-opening thing, I think, when you move home, is like, you run out of paper for the printer. One of us has to go buy paper for the printer. It's not like in the old day where you just go open up the press
and take it out.
And if it's not there, you go to the press around the corner and it's there. You kind of have to go buy it. And then you kind of go, God, I didn't know it was €4 for a roll of that. And you kind of deal with that. That they're all the funny dynamics, but you have to be in it for a number of years to let that all settle
in.
You don't want to make silly decisions quickly, because, like, hiring is hard as well. Even the most recent hire that we had, like, it was tough to find somebody who was good, and then we found the right person and it was like, brilliant.
Right.
Happy days, we're ready to go now, and that person can add some real value.
Is there a seasonality in the business?
It's probably would have been more so a number of years ago, where we'd have obviously done a lot of garden stuff and then there would have been a bit of building materials. But I think because we've expanded the amount of eyeballs watching us, it's evened out pretty well.
Okay.
Like, January, February is very busy for a lot of the building stuff, because I think a lot of people come back in January and then their builder says, okay, I'm ready to go and lay the floors. And they're like, but you disappeared the start of December, because builders will often do that. And now you're ready, and they have a heart attack. And then we get a lot of that rush at the start of the year. But now, like, if we can hit Paddy's Day and hopefully get some decent weather kicking off, the garden stuff will take care of it. But again, because of the mix of items that we have, I've never really tried to even break it down to think about it really like per category. It's just how is the business doing? And you get a sense from it anyway.
Yeah.
But like a Saturday down in our yard is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like last Saturday we had 30-40 cars down in for over a 5-hour period, and that's, most people come down not on their own.
Yeah.
It's twos and threes and whatever else, and it's amazing. But everyone's going out with different items, and that's what we just focus on.
What's the strangest item you ever sold?
It's a tricky one because there's lots of random bits. Like the one I've said before, and it was literally just as I came in, like we sold a confession box. So that's definitely up there. Like we've had, it was about a year ago, we had a horse. It was a life-size horse made out of buffalo bone, which again, completely random. And these are pieces that we've bought that you know you're not selling it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But they're the wow factor when someone walks in and they go.
There's somebody out there that'll want
that. And
there
is somebody who'll want that. And they came part of jobs and deals anyway as well. So that's kind of, they weren't specific items we bought. But it's funny, each of us will have our own kind of grow or love for a certain item. Whoever goes out and buys and does the job usually loves items a little bit more. So I'll come back and open up the van and be like, lads, look what I got here. And then the lads are like, I'm busy. It doesn't matter. And I'm kind of like, no, look at this. Because I bought it, I'm so invested in it.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of that. So we'll all have our own different items, really. But it's at the end of the day, if a brick sells tomorrow, a brick sells tomorrow, and if a confession box sells the day after, that's what sells the day after. Our job now is there's a big empty space there.
Definitely to fill it. Yeah. Now, the final question book is here. I don't know what your question's going to be. Mistakes can happen in business. What are the greatest lessons you have learned tackling mistakes?
That's a good one, I would think it's been very open on it and putting your hands up. I think too many people try and cover up and justify why they've, I did that because, or I did that because that was the situation at the time. Sometimes you just get it wrong. And if you don't put your hands up on it, you won't learn anything because you'll just keep coming up with excuses and reasons. And that's
post-event rationalisation.
Yeah, definitely. And that you get away with that a couple of times. But if those mistakes, you'll make them again unless you actually learn something from it. And we've been fortunate we haven't had any major disasters that cost us tens of thousands of euros, because that's one way to definitely learn a lesson.
Yeah.
But we're probably quite lucky that we hold each other accountable. So there's times where I might be saying, okay, I'm going to go and do this and whatever else, or have done it, or maybe I've voiced it to the lads first and they kind of go, I don't know now. And then you kind of sit down, and maybe we're lucky that there's the three of us, and then with mom and dad on top, where there's maybe a little voting
sounding
can happen.
Sounding boards,
and there can often be a 2-1 opinion on it, and maybe that settles an argument on it. And I think if you don't acknowledge why you made the mistake, look into it, it'll probably happen again.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Harry Maharaj. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. And many thanks, and see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.